welcome to the Grow Your English podcast with English Language Tree. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Grow Your English podcast. You are very welcome from wherever in the world you are listening today. And my special guest today is Felício Dias, who is an online English teacher based in Brazil. He has a PhD in literature and an insatiable curiosity for language, culture, and literature. And in his language teaching, he aims to create a cozy and welcoming learning experience, helping speakers convey their ideas meaningfully without feeling pressured or overwhelmed. How lovely. Welcome, Felício.
Hello. Thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. And one of the reasons that Felício is here today is because he gave an absolutely brilliant talk at the Relax Into Your English digital retreat a few days ago. And the talk was all about how to become a more effective communicator by combating accent bias. And he's got so much to say on the topic, so much wonderful research. We decided to have a chat here on the podcast and dig in to the topic a little deeper, or a little more deeply, perhaps I should say. So, Felício, I wanted to ask you, first of all, when or how did this interest in this particular area of English language begin for you?
Okay.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the topic.
Yeah. Once again, thank you for having me here. That's a pleasure. I'm thrilled to have been invited. I guess it's been a topic really close to my heart for many reasons. I'm Brazilian, and then I guess as a non-native speaker, we do face a lot of prejudices when we reach a certain level of English. And then I feel that this sort of a model speaker, you know, the perfect speaker, is definitely the crux of the problem. Most of the time, they aim at certain types of speakers that are simply unrealistic, you know? For example, we can think of TV series, films, some sort of, even some types of a podcast in which, you know, the speech is somehow rehearsed. And then I guess since I was a language student back in time, I was, for some reason, I was always interested in somehow learning a little bit more about language diversity, you know, so what kind of English and people you speak. And then when I first had a language lesson in a language school, I studied at the time, and then my teacher, he was a Scottish, and it was a light bulb moment for me, because that was the moment I came to realize, oh, okay, so there's so many different ways of speaking, you know. And another striking thing is that at the time I was consuming a lot of the different TV series. And I remember watching some British TV series as well, like Skins, and listen to other British artists. But none of them spoke a sort of standard English. On the contrary, they all spoke a different type of English that at times I was even questioning myself and wondering, oh my goodness, is that really English what I'm listening to? So, and then I came to realize that, okay, so that's a sort of a diversity. I really want to try to understand why I struggle to get what, to make out what they're saying, you know, what is so hard. And I guess it opened my mind to so many other possibilities, you know. Also, going to university, I got in touch with different types of problems. For example, social problems, social background, and I guess very heated debates on racism, for example. Also, researching immigration, for instance, that you do get in touch with a lot of language prejudices as well. So I guess that's how everything started.
Yeah, okay. So it's been growing and building in your brain for quite a few years. But this idea of the perfect English speaker, the perfect English accent, it's complete nonsense. I started my teaching career in London, but working with people at quite low levels, and the material that was available was all these kind of clean, typical English accents, and in the end I stopped using it because this, you know, it wasn't equipping the students for life outside of the classroom, walking around London, listening to the, as you spoke about in your presentation, the multicultural London English, which is, yeah, just another strain, another type of English, many different Englishes. Yeah, so it's really important, and even now the big publishers are, you know, the material that they put out there for listening doesn't have that kind of diversity of sound and accent that is the reality of many, many English learners' lives. Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, and this sort of, I guess, the lack of representation in materials, I guess it's also due to not necessarily a lack of information, but also, I guess that we need more spaces to talk about brand new approach to language teaching, especially when it comes to moderate accent or spontaneous speech, you know, because I do wonder what sort of intelligible pronunciation or intelligible speech we've been promoting in the classroom, for example, you know, because when we're speaking fast or depending on the type of emotion, the way we're feeling, we may lack a clarity, you know, and emotion fundamentally affects the way we perceive other people, and we also are represented through the sound of our voices. And when we go to more traditional textbooks, especially the ones I learned language, you know, in the past, we feel that there is something missing there, you know, so it needs to be, I would say, revamped to some extent.
Absolutely, yeah. And emotional use of voice and emotional response to voice, it has a huge effect. Yeah, you're right. Would you like to explain a little bit then for our lovely listeners about accent bias? Because that's what you've been researching and speaking about. And tell us as well the relationship between being a good listener and combating what you've already mentioned, this accent prejudice.
Okay, roughly speaking, accent bias, accentism as well, it refers to how people can be purely judged on the way they sound or they speak.
Yeah.
While we just celebrate this sort of a mixed language and accent emerging, especially with the advent of global English, researchers have shown that accent bias is still a prevalent form of a microviolence and prejudice. And of course, indeed, it leads to a couple of other problems that perhaps people are not really aware of. For example, it may lead to unequal employment, unequal education. Also, people are judged based on their social backgrounds, for example. And then, I guess, once a group is perceived based on accent, it's no longer solely a mark of a regional origin, but it's definitely linked with broader stereotypes or stigma to some extent. In this sense, as far as I'm concerned, accents does become associated with an amalgamation of adjectives such as this person is lazy or incorrect, or oh no, she sounds friendly, or she sounds unfriendly. So I guess we end up labeling and judging people purely based on the way they speak, right? I guess it's not only about accent necessarily. I guess it does affect dialect and expressions, how a certain group convey the message in a community, for example, or when they not inside the community, how they are perceived by other groups.
I'm just going to interject there, actually, because I know we're talking about predominantly English being spoken as a second, third, etc. language, but even within cities, regions, countries, you know, different parts of whichever country you're listening from in the world right now, you will know about different accents and accentism within your own country. So within the UK, you know, I'm from the southwest. Traditionally, we have kind of a farmer voice, an agricultural voice. Yeah. I'm using my broadcasting voice right now, but the voice I use when I talk to my family will sound a little bit different. And, you know, there are so many different combinations and so many different perceptions. So it's important to remember that even within English-speaking worlds, there's still a lot of debate and a lot of prejudice. Yeah, is that something that happens in Brazil? I don't know much about Brazilian Portuguese and different kind of language varieties.
Yeah, you raise a very interesting point here. Like, the way I speak to my family is quite different while I'm teaching, for example.
Yeah.
And depending on the student I'm teaching, unfortunately, I have to tune down my accent or I have to speak in a different way. Mm-hmm. And then if I am teaching at a school, I guess things may get even worse, you know, so because of the type of prejudice we still find when we're teaching in some language institutions, for example, they have a sort of a preference. I don't know why this binary thing like American, British, English, so it's still quite predominant here. But about accent here in Brazil, this is not to the extent as we can find in the UK, for example, because for part of my research actually considers the variations in the UK, and that's so many, it's impressive. When I first got to know the number of variations, I was staggered because, this is really a high number of variations. But here in Brazil, we do have, of course, like in TV, for example, you definitely have a very standard way of sounding. For instance, I am from a different city. I can tell you that nowadays my accent is completely mixed because I've been here in São Paulo for about 9 years, and I'm from Rio de Janeiro, which is a completely different city. And here in São Paulo, I'm still perceived as a sort of carioca, but people may take a while to spot where I'm from. Okay. And in Rio, people don't really, sometimes they don't believe I'm a carioca, you know, because the way I pronounce some words have drastically changed, if I would say, you know, so it's interesting. But of course, there is a standard, especially I guess in some, especially on media, for instance, like listen to the news, listen to radios, actors, most of them, I can tell you, they end up undergoing accent reduction process if they want to play a character in a film, for instance. So it's really prevalent. So it's quite prevalent.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to a lot of Radio 4 here in the UK, and they brought in a new continuity announcer, that's the person that kind of introduces the programs and speaks between the news and the next thing. And they brought somebody new in who has kind of Caribbean English. And so many people wrote in saying, this is not okay, it's not good enough, it's not proper English. I mean, it's so backwards.
You mentioned the Caribbeans. Now, I'll be in the UK in September because I'm carrying out research on literature, because I'm really keen on investigating some novels in which characters, they do reflect the sort of prejudice, because we do have a lot of Caribbean writers based in the UK, for instance, and they've been producing amazing literature. Yeah. So it's been a very heated debate indeed. We call like Caribbean, also black literature as well. So there are lots of terms, and it's a really important, I guess it's another way of perhaps diving into the topic through different lenses. So it's another possibility.
Don't give away your secrets, but are you going to be interviewing writers in September?
Yeah, I'll be doing a research at the British Library. Yeah. Also, I'll be speaking to some booksellers, specifically some Angie's bookshops. I've researched, so I found them.
Great.
And I'll be staying in a place that was predominantly, I mean, built by immigrants. And one of the authors I highly recommend, she's definitely one of my favorite writers, is Zadie Smith.
Zadie Smith.
She's one of the most important in this scenario.
Super interesting. Oh, I bet that's going to be an incredibly enriching trip. How exciting. All right. Yeah. So we've spoken a little bit about accent bias. How does this affect your learners then? What, in terms of what our accents say about us and how you're working with your students?
First and foremost, I believe there is a sort of, I would say, idea of a single identity, that English is such a pure language. And then this is the most difficult part and the most difficult myth to dismantle, showing then that English is not this unit, you know. So it's actually varied, it's mixed. And I guess the very first thing is showing then how to listen to different Englishes.
Yeah.
This is by far the most important part of the learning process. Students, they usually believe that speaking and communicating, producing language is the only skill they still have to sharpen or to brush up. Mm-hmm. But I would say that listening perhaps is as important as speaking. And I would say that some language teachers and some learners, they do lack skills to cope with spontaneous speech. And it is not their fault. So the thing I hear the most from them is, I was trying to get the news, but I couldn't get a word of what they said, you know? Mm. And then when I ask them what they were watching, they say, oh, I was watching something from Liverpool, Manchester, or Midlands. This is why I think accent is still something extremely important, you know?
Yeah.
And I am completely against the idea of just not showing them the varieties of accents in the UK. I guess not approaching accent, just showing diversity.
Yeah.
But I do need to work on phonology aspect, you know? So that's, for me, one of the nicest part, because it all depends on the way you're going to approach the topic.
Exactly. And I think I'll add at that point, you know, people who become English teachers, it's a long time since I did my Trinity, it's the equivalent of the CELTA qualification, but listening activities, traditionally, you know, you listen to a text and then the exercise is comprehension questions or predict what's going to come, answer the questions, have a discussion about the content. And there's so little time devoted to listen to that little bit. What exactly did you hear? How are those words linked? How do those vowel sounds differ from other vowel sounds, you know, that you might expect those words to contain? And yeah, exactly as you say, taking that approach where you're not just listening for content. It's so common. And I can understand if, you know, if you're newly qualified or if it's just something that you've never done before, why that's the case. And materials, I think, are changing, definitely. But it's such a skipped part, isn't it?
Yeah. Perhaps even for teachers, it can be daunting, you know,
and absolutely
challenging. So yeah. I love using one specific term called communication pitfalls or language pitfalls. And I do believe we should embrace them as a sort of an opportunity to turn miscommunication into a part of a development journey. You know, while I agree that advanced learners should be prompt to employ sophisticated language and advanced language, I guess the sense of imperfection and intelligibility, for example, of a language, should not fall by the wayside. They should be also focusing on this sort of unpredictable things we find in language. For example, as I said, hesitation, emotion, you know, like listen to other aspects. There is so much to be uncovered, you know.
Yeah.
And then it seems that we can only focus on vocabulary or words, you know, missing. And then revamping our approach to listening may also furnish learners with the skills to improve their listening in their own languages, for example, because we're literally teaching them how to listen to things. You know, you do a stellar job, for example, with your listening activities in a very amusing, different way. And I've learned a lot from you, you know. So, and I guess, and I'm not saying I've learned in terms of English. I'm talking about life skills, you know. Yeah. So this is extremely important.
Yeah, I mean, we're always... any kind of speaker, making mistakes, saying saying ah, starting again, reformulating, interrupting ourselves. I've noticed by looking at the transcripts for my podcast episodes that I have a tendency to repeat little bits as I'm thinking about what's coming next. And this idea that saying means that you're not a good speaker, it's just not true. Count the ums. It's really true. And we've been talking about the phonology of listening, which is this, well, it's the title of the book, isn't it, that we've both been referring to. And I'm just gonna add, I found some notes from 2016 when I went to a pronunciation training day and Richard Cordwell was there, and I wanted to add in, as we mentioned briefly before we started recording, about what he called back then jungle listening, as opposed to greenhouse listening or garden listening, which is the kind of ELT tidied up version of the speech that we should be practicing, or that learners should be practicing. But that this jungle listening is actually called messy, unruly. It's the reality of speech that isn't dealt with. But it sounds like you are going straight into the jungle there and dealing with the messy listening with your students and the different accents as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing opportunity for negotiation of meaning, for example, because we end up dealing with lots of breakdown in communication. That's the matter of the fact. And then how do you go about then? You know, if you do mean to instill autonomy in learners, they definitely should be equipped with the sort of a tools, you know, to cope with this breakdown in communication.
Absolutely. Yes, and actually, how long have you been teaching English, Felicio?
Oh, I guess you've been teaching for 12 years.
12 years?
If I'm not mistaken, 12 years. Yes.
That's a real coincidence, because Richard Cordwell said that at this talk I went to, because I wrote it down, that it took him 12 years of teaching before he started delving in to recording, sitting down, transcribing, working out what this kind of, you know, detailed approach was. So you beat Richard Cordwell. How do you feel about that?
I've actually, but you know, 12 years, but always feeling a little bit displaced, like, because I was in two minds whether I should be focused on literature or philosophy or then just in language teaching, you know. But nowadays, I guess that's part of my approach. It's a more hybrid approach.
Yeah.
And actually, I find it very positive indeed, because then it broadened my mind, my horizons, you know. So it was a sort of a watershed moment in my life when I realized that I could actually combine all those things I had been studying for a while. So,
yeah, fantastic.
I guess this is sort of, this kind of a moment Cordwell went through. So it's quite similar in this sense, but in a different way.
But it's, as you said, you're getting to now combine your areas of expertise as well with the literature and the language together. Yeah, wonderful. Okay. Yeah, so the language pitfalls, I like what you said in your most recent piece of writing, that they should be embraced as an opportunity to turn miscommunication into part of a developmental trajectory.
Yes, exactly.
Quoting you.
Because I guess this is something, we're talking about accent bias, but also a few learners, they're seeking a perfect English. But then the very nature of English is imperfect, you know, and this is embedded in our language system. So if you do want to speak naturally, if you do want to reach the so-called fluency, we should be able to embrace these imperfections, you know, because language pitfalls are definitely part of the system. And I guess it speaks volumes about who we are. So though I do sometimes, I get really annoyed by my repetitions. For some reason, I find it interesting because in these other moments, I'm definitely feeling something, you know, I'm trying to convey my feelings, or perhaps I heard something meaningful or something touching.
Yeah.
And then like in here, for example, having this very informal chat. So we feel relaxed. And then as a consequence, we're definitely going to pause to think, you know, hesitate. We're going to be repetitive. We're going to use feelers. Because at the end of the day, that's part of a communication, you know. So it's not a TV series, right? This is reality. So
yeah. And it's, you know, when we're not, I should say, actually, Felicio's writing is really beautiful. You write so wonderfully.
Thank you.
And, you know, speaking, you don't necessarily, one doesn't have the time to find the perfect word and the perfect sentence construction. You know, that's writing. You can do that through writing. But when we're speaking, yeah, we will repeat words like brilliant, fantastic, absolutely. Because we're in that moment and we're enthused, as you say, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, where should we go from there? Did you want to give a little example of a communication pitfall?
When my students, they listen to some speakers and they very used to listen to American standard English. So they definitely expecting to hear a car, better, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when they deal with some specific things concerning pronunciation, phonology, such as the glottal stop, which is when we suppress this T in words, and we, instead of saying better, we say better, or instead of saying butter, we say butter, they do struggle with it. When they're dealing with the speakers in a more laid-back way, in a relaxed context, they're very likely to deal with this sort of a thing, you know, and then that they might misinterpret what is being said, you know.
Yeah.
And some may find it problematic. Some may find it some may consider it as a problem. But I find it part of our language system, you know. So this is a quite common thing in the spoken language.
Yeah.
So this is sort of we may address some phonology combined with a very fruitful discussion concerning accentism. It may have a very positive impact on learners because you are furnished then with the tools to interpret messages themselves.
Yes, and deal with the speed as well. So I read or heard somewhere that English can have up to 14 syllables a second, which is really very fast. So I've said to people before, if it's a recorded source of English, to play it back on a half speed or a 0.75 speed, just to, you know, to try and decode at a slower rate, because we do, and when we're, you know, emotional and enthusiastic, as we said, we do speed up.
And this is teachable, I would say, this word, teachable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, dealing with the lack of a clarity, it's completely teachable. Have in mind, once again, this is part of our spontaneous speech, opposed to moderate or careful speech, right? This is spontaneous.
I think some of the best moments I've had in the classroom, what you described earlier as light bulb moments, have been when we've been doing listening and, you know, the student says, I didn't quite catch that bit. So we isolate it and we work on it and, you know, try and say it in a slower way. And they go, oh, I see.
Yeah.
And you just think, gosh, you know, that it shouldn't be hidden. And you're right. It's completely teachable or explainable. And so many people shy away from that a little bit, I think. So if you're an English teacher and you're listening, take confidence in that you can work in this way with students. It's definitely teachable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really good point. I think maybe one more point I wanted to make. It's not really a question, but just a point. And I think you could definitely comment on this, is that what English teachers and English learners hear is completely different. Doesn't matter if you're English as a first language speaker or not, but that kind of discrepancy between somebody delivering, for want of a better word, a listening lesson, and somebody receiving those listening texts. It's completely different what learners are kind of perceiving and listening out for to what teachers are perhaps trying to guide them to. Do you want to comment on that, that kind of teacher-learner discrepancy?
I guess, especially if we're talking about beginners, for instance, for me, it's the most challenging level to teach, if I'm being honest. I guess that the approach we should adopt it with beginners should be more careful, and we should be more, once again, equipped with theoretical resources to justify what we're doing, you know, I mean, to really understand which steps we have to take, for instance. Otherwise, we end up just doing things by habit or just in feelings, you know, and that's not such a good idea when it comes to beginners, because they can barely support specific words in more moderate speech, for instance. So let alone in more spontaneous speech, let's say. So I guess in this sense, we should be a little bit more mindful of what we do in the classroom with beginners and more intermediate levels. However, when it comes to more advanced learners, proficient learners, in this sense, I don't know, but I feel that we can definitely give them more resources, but at the same time, we can name the resources, you know. I am the type of a teacher that I'll be saying, oh, this is a glottal stop, or this is a glottalization, this is, I don't know, elision. So yeah. I like naming things because I trust in them, you know. I know they're capable of articulating this sort of a thing to improve their listening skills, right?
Yeah.
Especially dealing with more challenging speeches. As a matter of fact, most of them, when they are seeking lessons, when they are seeking improvement, they definitely need English to put together presentations, or perhaps they want to take part in meetings. And I had a student, he was working for a British company, and his boss was from Liverpool. And I mean, we needed to dive into Scots accent, you know, because that was his necessity. That was part of his everyday work, you know.
And I really like the fact that you're naming and using the language of listening with your students. They, you know, very, very lucky to have you. And I'm sure that they're very engaged, and that their noticing skills are particularly good for that reason. I went to Liverpool for the first time last year, and having mentioned that thing about listening on a slower playback, I wish that you can do that in real life, like in Black Mirror, somehow kind of slow people down, because intelligibility also is to do with speed of delivery, but Scouse accent is a proud one. Felicio, thank you so, so, so much for coming onto the podcast and speaking with such eloquence and such passion about such an important issue. It's been a real, real pleasure. Is there anything that you'd like to add before I ask my final question?
It's important to know what's happening. To have a good grasp of how people speak in Newcastle, in Midlands, in the UK, but also in other parts of the globe, because I've worked with people from New Zealand, Australia, you know, and South Africa. I mean, we're not dealing with names and words, but with ideas and concepts, right? So when we're approaching a sort of type of accent, it's important to bear in mind we're dealing with a whole idea that speaks volume about the people from the country, a whole population. So it's important to be extremely careful when approaching this sort of a thing.
That's a really good point.
That's why researching is paramount.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, there is a bit of a north-south divide sometimes, and you know, it's the most basic thing in the world, isn't it? To take the Mickey mm-hmm. out of somebody else's accent because it's different to your own. But looking at accents, behind the sound is a person, like you say, with a whole identity, a whole community, a whole history, a whole set of things happening on that day that could change their voice. You know, it's, yeah, we should tread carefully. You're completely right. Yeah, thank you. All right, so I think now it's time for me to ask my final question, which I ask mm-hmm. all of my guests who come on to mm-hmm. the podcast, which is, mm-hmm. do you have a tip for people to grow their English?
I need to say it again, because that's the perhaps the core of listening to me, which is embracing natural interaction. I guess then we should try to draw student attention to this sort of a things, you know, while doing listening exercise. Not only does it make things fun, but also we definitely help them to deal with the more challenging context, you know, different speakers. I know we may struggle to find the resources, but it's important to make an effort to find more realistic samples, realistic audio clips to help our learners in communication. So that's the most important thing for me.
Fantastic. So that's really a kind of grow your English teaching tip, isn't it, for all the teachers that are out there? And if you're not an English teacher, but you're an English learner, it is difficult to navigate the sounds of, yeah. of English. And I hope people feel reassured and inspired from listening to you today. So I will add Felicio's social media Substack details to the show notes. I should also mention that the Relax Into Your English digital retreat recordings are still available. If you haven't joined us live, it's no problem. You can still sign up. You've got until the 4th of August. There's Felicio's presentation, there's mine, 7 other fantastic workshops. So yeah, do sign up and listen to the recordings. It would be great to have your ears on those. But that is pretty much it for today. Felicio, thank you very much.
Thank you once again. It was really fun. I had such a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. All right. Thanks very much. Thanks, everybody. And until the next time, goodbye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Grow Your English podcast, come and find me on Instagram @eltreeonline.